Okay, today's daf is daf mem beis. We'd already started the sugya a little bit by mistake, because I had thought that we had started a little later. So if that's the case, if you don't mind, let's just begin once again from mem aleph amud beis at the two dots, and get into this sugya from the beginning, five lines up from the bottom. So remember that the Gemara has established that shlosha lekuchot are mitzarfim, which means that if you have three separate people that are being magzik in the karka, then they can all have a chazaka. So that if the guy wasn't mocha, who claims to, who shows that he was the original owner 4 years ago, the last one can say, well, I'm keeping this property because I got it from somebody who got it from somebody who got it from you, and you didn't say anything. And now that first guy doesn't have his contract. Of course, I have my contract, but that doesn't help me that much. But he doesn't have his contract, and that's fine, because we can establish that we were here in aggregate more than 3 years. So that means that the owner cannot say, well, when I saw you clowns changing from 1 year to the next, I obviously assumed that none of you had the guts to sit there and face the suit. So I figured, okay, you know, I don't have time to play. Like, he can't say that. And we assume that he is aware of the fact that they have been doing business with this field, which, of course, there's no way that he would have sat back and allowed to happen. And that's why it's a good chazoka if there was no mecha'a. Omar Rav, this is only true if there was buying and selling that is documented in a shtar. But if it's not in a shtar, so then the owner, the original owner, can say, how am I supposed to know you were buying and selling? I just thought it was clowns that were coming in for hit and run jobs on my field. So if you have a shtar, then we know that he knows about it, because that's the whole point of a shtar. A shtar generates a kol, which now becomes public knowledge, and you might as well put it in the newspaper so that it's not public, it's accessible to the public. So lemeimra, now since Rav now has made a difference between a shtar and between eidim, so clearly Rav is saying that only a shtar eat lekala, but eidim let like kala. So in other words, something that isn't written down in a document, it doesn't matter how many witnesses there are, those witnesses do not establish a kol that would have allowed us to turn to the owner and say, no, what are you talking about? You didn't know. There were witnesses who knew, and therefore, obviously, you didn't know. Is that true, though? But the Amar Rav did not, Rav, say that ha-mocher sadeh be'edim goveh minechasim mishu'ah badim. We have the same problem of being able to be aware of what's going on in a case where somebody buys a field. Now, normal transactions of fields always have a certain amount of risk. That risk is that there might have been a lien that was pre-existing on that field. Now, there's two ways for a lien to pre-exist. A guy may have taken a loan, and then a lien was created on the field that he owned. Or the guy might have had a lien against another field that he had, and that field he sold off to somebody. Now, that person is in danger of his having to pay the lien. The thing is, though, that he has a guarantee that he can go and collect from whatever field was left, and that, unfortunately, happens to be the field that you just bought, which is not going to be taken out from under you. So in order to avoid that risk, so we have a takana that unless the buyer was capable of knowing that there was a lien, then there is no lien that you can establish on that field. Now, that should really have exactly the same standards as the knowledge of the person who is owning a field that should have been mocha. Now, over here, we're told by Rav that that person is not assumed to have knowledge if there are witnesses. He's only assumed to have knowledge if there is a shtar. That's what you're saying. And only a shtar has sufficient public awareness that a buyer protects himself. So then if that's the case, how is it that Rav Paskind that ha-mocher sadeh be'edim goveh minechasim mishu'ah badim? That when somebody purchases a field, and he purchased that field without a document, but he purchased it with witnesses, that is sufficient to allow the purchaser of the next field to be open to an attack by this person who bought the first field coming to collect the money when the field was taken from him for another guy's loan. He now comes and takes the second field. And you said, well, I didn't know that there was a chance that it would come to me. I mean, I thought everything was fine. Well, that's your problem. What do you mean it's my problem? How was I supposed to know? Well, there were witnesses. Everybody knows. But I know that Rav Paskin, the witnesses are not enough to generate a kol. So now that means that Rav contradicts himself. When it comes to the din of mecha'a, there we could say to the owner that only if there was a shtar We could say to him, look, you knew perfectly well that this happened. But if there were witnesses, he could say, I never heard anything about it. And yet, when it comes here to the question of buyer protection and the ability of someone to have a lien against another fellow who buys a field after he does to be able to collect from it, over there it's sufficient to have witnesses alone. Now, how do you explain that? Says the Gemara, I explained it very simply. You're making a very, very basic error. The idea of buyer protection is not something like the U.S. government believes that they have to take care of everybody. Buyer protection means that people need to take care of themselves. All we need to do is make it possible for them to take care of themselves. But you certainly don't have to write on the coffee that this is hot. That's their problem. So now, if that's the case, the same thing is true over here. If we make it possible for due diligence, did you want to find out whether you were buying a field that had a lien? If there were witnesses, you could have found out. If it's a question of you could have found out, then buyer beware. You didn't bother finding out. Shalom uvracha. We're not going to protect you if you don't care about protecting yourself, you idiot. Mashenkin, in the other case, he's not interested in doing any due diligence. He owns the field already. He's got a contract. He's got no worries. The only thing that starts to bother him is, who is this clown in my field? But then he sees the guy leaves. Oh, okay, thank God he got out of there. I really didn't want to have to schlep to the police. So why should he do, so to speak, due diligence to find out? Ah, but that guy sold the Brooklyn Bridge. That's my business, he sold the Brooklyn Bridge. So Mamela, if it's a shtar, then that is a different level of kol. That's not a kol that allows you to find out. That's a kol that throws it in your face. It's as if it was in the headlines of the news. Then we know that you knew. Mashenkin, a kol generated by Aiden is insufficient to throw it in my face, but it is sufficient to allow me to find out if I'm interested in finding out. And as I pointed out yesterday, that's exactly the svara that differentiates between a chazaka done at a distance and a mechor done at a distance. The chazaka done at a distance, we assume that the owner knows about, even though it's at a distance. The mechor done at a distance, we don't assume that the guy that was in the field knows about because he thinks he's free and clear of problems.
He doesn't know to look for it.
Exactly. He's not interested in looking. Therefore, answers the Gemara, and this is where we got up to yesterday. Hatam lekuchot inu afsidu anafshayu. When it comes to buyers, we don't need to create buyer protection. We just need to allow them to protect themselves. And we did that. Now, if they don't bother finding out that there was a kol which existed because of the Aiden, then they were the ones who went ahead and threw their money out to the wind, and that doesn't bother us. That's their problem. That's not the public's problem. Now, the question is, did indeed Rav even say that much? Because now we're making this big distinction that it's possible to be govim and a chasim mishubadim as long as the buyer had the ability to find out what was going on, even though that was done with Aiden. Because we expect the buyer to do due diligence. How do you explain then this? Well, it's not. What about this mission? Now remember that the creation of a lien with a loan, or the creation of a lien with the purchase of a property with a guarantee for payment if that property is taken away, we've assumed now is exactly the same. A buyer finds out that a previous property was sold with a guarantee against the property that he wants to buy. That's exactly the same as a buyer finding out that this person borrowed money with a guarantee that the money would pay back with a lien on the property he's about to purchase. So in both cases, we have the assumption that a buyer is going to do due diligence. In which case, if I can bring you a raya, which I'm about to do, that when it comes to the case of a lien that's created by a loan, we do not consider Aiden to be sufficient, which means that I don't expect the buyer to do due diligence. I need to protect him. So now, Rav is contradicting himself. Here on the one hand, he's Republican. On the other hand, he's a Democrat. I mean, you got to make up your mind, right? So what's he going to do? So it says the Gemara, what about the Mishnah? I mean, he's certainly not going to argue with the Mishnah, right? So how can he have both of these shitot? If somebody lent money with a contract, then indeed he has a lien against those persons' fields, which allows him to collect even when the field was sold to a third party, because the third party was protected by the contract. Could have found out. But if he sold that field, if he took out that field, took out that loan, so then he can collect, but not if somebody else had already bought the field. So he can be gova only from the chasim b'nei chorin that are free and clear of somebody else's pre-existing loan or sale. Maybe you'll try to tell me, okay, fine, you're assuming that Rav agrees with the Mishnah. There are rare cases where Rav argues with the Mishnah. Here it seems to be pretty clear that he doesn't agree with the Mishnah. What should we do? So you'll try to tell me, so Rav is a Tana, or he can't ask on information by assuming that he agrees, and he can be Poleg. So let me move on to my serious objection here. Rav himself paskened against himself. Rav Shmuel d'Amar Tarvayu, that a milva alpe eino gove, lo mena yoshim, lo mena lekuchot. So there you go. So here we have a lien that was created with witnesses, without a shtar, where we certainly just said that that doesn't matter because you could do due diligence in a case where there was aidim. And here he's asking beferish, you will not be able to collect with that lien with somebody who had already bought the field. Now what are you going to do about that? Says the Gemara, you've been making another very naive assumption. Your assumption is that the level of knowledge, public knowledge, that's created by a sale with witnesses is the equivalent of the level of public knowledge that is created by taking a loan with witnesses. Now, let's be serious. In practical terms, you really believe that every time somebody takes a loan, everybody knows about it? I mean, obviously not. People don't want people to know that they're taking a loan. It's certainly not good for my public image, and it also damages me financially. If people know I'm strapped, then if I'm trying to move a property or something, then they're going to offer me less. So I do my best to make sure that this is not publicized. On the other hand, if you are trying to sell a piece of property, do you do your best to let every agent in town know about it? To spread about the fact that you got a property for sale? So how can you compare the two? If I'm coming to buy a property where another property was just sold, but it was sold without a shtar. Come on, the whole city was talking about it. It's houses for sale in the Rova. Now everybody doesn't know about it, everybody knows about it. And that's exactly what we're banking on. That everybody knows about it. And so, Mamela, how can you ask, says the Gemara? You're asking from Milva Azvine Karamita. I mean, how naive can you be to ask from a case of a loan to a case of a sale? Milva Kika Yosef Betina Kayosef. When you're talking about a loan, when a person borrows, he wants to borrow in private. In order, forget about whatever psychological issues are involved. He wants to borrow in private for straight out financial reasons. That's all he needs is people to find out he's strapped for cash. They're going to figure now's a good time to give him a low ball offer on his house, and he'll be forced to take it. He's not interested in that. Masha Einkein, Zvine, if you're talking about a sale, Manda Zavin Ara, somebody who's trying to sell, he wants to publicize it. So Befarhesia Zavin Kechad Levig Lakala, he wants people to know that the property is available because the more bidders he's got, the higher he's going to be able to take it. And so Mamela, we have, it turns out, perfectly consistent Sarkim by Rav, which gives us basically three different levels that we need to think about. So a shtar is a slap in the face. And therefore the coal that's generated by a shtar is sufficient to protect anybody, and it's sufficient to let anybody know, even if you're trying to keep it private. So both in terms of the coal that's generated for the recipient, and the fact that there's no way for you, the one who generated the coal, to keep it quiet, on either end, the shtar works. Forget it. You're out of the picture. You may want to keep something private, but if you took a loan with a contract, it gets out, everybody knows about it, and there it's a coal. Plus, the level of the coal is the level of a coal that everybody knows, including somebody who's not trying to do due diligence. It is still true, however, that there is an interim level called Aiden, where over there we need to deal with both ends. In terms of the generation of the coal by the Aiden, if we're talking about a sale, then that coal is sufficient not to be a slap in the face, so it won't be good enough to generate a mechar, but it will be good enough to provide for the potential for due diligence, and therefore it satisfies our buyer protection program. Masha'inkein, if there is a din of a buyer protection that requires the ability to do due diligence on a loan, since over there the coal can be controlled if all you have is witnesses and not a shtar, there we say you can't even do due diligence. When it comes to something that is capable of due diligence, then that depends. In other words, if you're a Baal Mecha, so then you don't need to do due diligence. If you're spending money, you do need to do due diligence. And that allows now for the variations that we've had in these dinim in a completely consistent way and in a very down-to-earth and common sense kind of way. No fancy svaras.
In the case of the selling the land, it's not the Edom that are generating the coils, the Balasodah.
Well, no, he himself, we don't need that he should be going to the papers necessarily and being the Farsang, but we're saying he certainly is encouraged, not telling them, don't let anybody know. So once there's witnesses generate a coil. If he's borrowing and he says, look, I would really appreciate if you keep it's private, but I need you to come into the bank for a minute for me and so on. So then it's not very nice for them to go running around and talking about it. Why would they? Turn around on it. Now, moving on now to the, actually moving back in a sense, to the original assumption. We spoke about the idea of tziruf. So indeed, the Braita says, "Achla ha'av shana va'ben shtayim," or "Av shtayim va'ben shana," or for that matter, "Av shana va'ben shana v'lokeiav shana arezu chazakan." Somebody comes along. Now, the last case here would be the ultimate case. He comes along to a buyer and says, "What are you doing in my field? I bought it from so and so." Goes to so and so. "Why did you sell my field?" "I inherited it from my father." "And your father, you know that he was there?" "Well, he was there a year." So the third guy, the buyer, says, "Look, you weren't mocha. You knew that the original guy had died. So it's all very nice of you to come now." And he gave it to his son, all perfectly legal and above board, and everybody knew about it. And the probate court was involved, and now everybody knows that I bought it. And you didn't say a word, so don't try to tell me that you thought everybody was a first clown left because he didn't have the guts. That's why he dropped it. The second clown left because he also didn't have the guts. That's why he sold it with a contract. Please. So in such a case, we're mitzvah. It's exactly how we began the sugya with Rav's Maimer of Shtar. Right? This is the equivalent of Shalosh Makot, except we made it more complicated to show. Goes across the board over here. So now, what you're saying is, says the Gemara, in this Braita, is what indeed Rav has been talking about. And you're saying now that a lokeach eats late kala, so that a buyer is assumed to generate a kol. Now, in the inverse case, that should also work. Because look, let's say that somebody has a field and the original owner of the field dies after a year. He continues to eat this field in the presence of the heir of the original owner, right? So he eats it achla b'fnei ha'av shana, u'b'fnei ha'ben shtayim. Or he eats it b'fnei ha'av shtayim, b'fnei ha'ben shana, b'fnei ha'av shana, b'fnei ha'ben shana, b'fnei lokeach shana. Ooh, oh, so harezu chazaka. Now, this doesn't work, because if the ben sells it to somebody else, we've already seen, that's the ultimate mecha'a. I don't want to deal with the clown who's in my father's field. I'll just sell it, let him worry about, let the buyer worry about getting him out of the field, right? So now, if you're going to tell me, well, how am I supposed to know? He knew that that, well, what kind of mecha'a is that? Right? So if you're going to tell me that elokeach eat leikala, so then obviously we're going to say, where's your contract? Well, he didn't say anything. What do you mean he didn't say anything? He sold it. I didn't know about the sale. But Rav Paskin that it does have a call. So how can you possibly say that you have a right to taina? I never heard the mechar if you heard the sale. And we know that a sale is in lecha mecha agadol amizal. Therefore, there seems to be a problem now on the other end, in the inverse case. Because we certainly haven't managed to deal with this call in ways that it should only work in one direction, like we did with a loan. I mean, we said it's a slap in the face. If it's a slap in the face, then it would be a slap in the face to a mahzik who isn't looking for due diligence. But it does let him know about what happened. So this is now inconsistent. Does that mean we have to adjust the difference that we made between kol and edim and find some other basis? Amar of Papa, no. There's no alternative. Kitanya yibim b'ocher sedotav stam. You assumed that bifnei halokeach means where a guy went out and sold this field. And there you're right. But suppose the son who inherited the father inherited a block of field. So he's got like 20 things now. He doesn't live here. He's just trying to sell out the whole thing. So he puts it up for sale. The estate of so-and-so is up for sale. So just because everybody knows that the estate of so-and-so was sold and there was a shtar, and yes, maybe in the details, even in the shtar, maybe it even lists the location of each place, but that isn't what gets around. What gets around is the estate was sold. That's already a question, whether if the shtar specifies. But certainly if a shtar would say, kol nichseda by Barmerian, so the guy says, well, it never occurred to me that you were thinking this was nichseda by Barmerian, so to speak. I bought it years before, while the old man was still alive. So Mamela, in that case, there's no reason for the mafsik to assume that the mechira was in any way a mecha'a against him. He took the obvious course. He said, I mean, obviously, let's say if he had bought it 20 years before, we're going to think that it included some field. He said, I bought the field 3 months before. What's the difference? It certainly wasn't what was being referred to. So now we have a clear understanding of the nature of the kol on various levels, from where it's generated, how it's generated, to what extent it's generated for the different cases. So this was a very information-dense daf, which is lots of fun, always more fun. Mm-hmm. Well, we're now holding at the Halakha Mishnah, and our Halakha President is still not here. Ha'omanin. There's some question, as we're going to see, about whether the word omanin appears in the Mishnah, and it has important implications. But what we're talking about is a dry cleaner, who is obviously not going to be able to say, when he goes out wearing your suit, that he bought your suit. Because if you come to Taina to him, what are you doing with my suit? And he says, well, I'm in possession, and that's, you know, 90% of the law. So, well, of course you're in possession, you idiot. I've been bringing my clothes to you for years. Open it up and see my name in the little dry cleaner thing. Right?
You put
So obviously, in a case like that, you can't taina chazaka. Now, this is the first Mishnah that we've seen that seeks to give the common denominator of the nature of the word chazaka by using it interchangeably. There are really three completely different senses of chazaka in terms of the details that we've been referring to. Cheskas habatim is a reference to the assumption of ownership because of a very complicated kind of thing, of a balance of psychological factors, not having a shtar, and so on and so forth. It's obviously its own category of rights to say, I don't have a contract, but there was a taina that gives me rights to buy. Very complicated. But then there's another concept of the simple meaning of chazaka, when it means somebody's muzik in something, is that he physically holds it. If he physically holds it, then hamotzi mechaveru alav araya, which of course is not the issue with real estate. You can't physically own real estate. So when it comes to real estate, we're dealing with totally different issue. We're dealing with the abstraction of possession as opposed to the physicality of possession. When it comes to metaltalin, we're dealing with the actual physical presence of possession. But nonetheless, chazaka means take that assumption and strengthen it. So that's what we do. We give you the strength of the fact that you're there. Now, there's a completely different nature of chazaka, but it comes from the same idea, which is the way, one of the ways, that you can be kona real estate, is by doing something which strengthens your show of ownership. And there, if it's coupled with the agreement of a seller, obviously, you need data cheret makneh. It's not that it gives you any assumption, zero assumption, but it provides the symbolism of possession, which creates balut with the proper exchange of values to be understood, and the data cheret makneh, and so on and so forth. Okay? This Mishnah wants to use the word in every possible way to show us the interrelated nature of the word chizuk and lahachazik. So what it tells us first is obviously not a reference to real estate. I mean, there's no umanim on real estate. So when you're talking about umanim, you're talking about your dry cleaner, you're talking about your washing machine repairman, anybody to whom something would have been brought into for tikkunim or work. And therefore, there's no reason whatsoever to assume that he's the owner just because he has it. There is, in fact, another whole different category, and that is things that are meant to be lent. So things that are usually exchanged between people. So can I borrow your screwdriver? Also are not included in chazaka. Here, when we're talking about omanim, we're talking about things that are not meant usually to be lent out. People don't lend out their clothes and so on. And there, even those kind of things, because of the circumstances of where it was found, even those things don't have the chazaka of the physicality of possession. Now, moving on to the other use of chazaka, which is property. So shutafim, arisim, apotropim. So where you are both owners in a property, or you're a sharecropper on a property, cases that we've discussed before, or you are, in fact, a apotropus. You're a court-appointed now, what's the word in English? Trustee. For a property or for a yosom, well, whatever case you have, the apotropos, or for a baal who left town and you have to provide for his wife, and whatever the case is, you obviously cannot taina that you have a chazaka, because in these cases you have a reason to be there, and basically people are going to assume not that you're an owner because of your possession, but that you're a worker because of your possession. Furthermore, lo leish chazaka b'nichsei ishto. If a baal has been taking the peros from nichsei malug, obviously he can't come and say, I bought it, the field from my wife. We all know that you married her, and part of marrying her was your right to eat the peros, but you certainly don't get any rights to her property. But the opposite is also true. A woman who's been eating the peros of nichsei baala cannot claim that she bought it from her husband, because since usually a husband will provide for his wife, it may well be that this is how he provided for her. So he told her, look, you can have all the produce in this field, use it to provide for yourself, eat, sell, as the case may be. And there's no reason for us to assume that it's really a purchase. Not only that, but even an av b'nichsei ha-ben, or ben b'nichsei ha-av. So where you're talking about people that generally would not be makbid on each other, and they help each other out, so that it's perfectly reasonable for a father to be farming for his son when his son is out of town, or vice versa, to turn around and to claim that you bought it, that's no claim at all. If you bought it, show us your contract. But this is only where you're going ahead to claim possession using your chazaka as a backing for your claim of ownership. But where the chazaka is the act of acquiring ownership, so benotein matana, let's say, or ha'akim shechalku, let's see the little game, ve'hamachazik, I thought we said before ha'machazik, or ha'machazik v'nechzei hager. So over there, you are the first one to be fortunate enough to arrive at the scene when the guy just dropped dead, and you're going to take over. He has no heirs, because he is a ger and didn't have any Jewish children or anything like that, and now he's there just, as the Rabbeinu Bachya points out, the word ger, the same as the word for gargir. He's just a lone seed out there in the world, all by himself. So you take over what he has by going out and doing something. So Na'al, in all these three cases, or Yo'akim Shechalku, each one of the brothers wants to be mazik in the estate, this is my piece, that's your piece. So there, when you do the act of chazaka, such as putting up a door, Na'al, or putting up a wall, or opening up what was previously closed, or paratz, koshu, we'll see what koshu means in Gemara, harezo chazaka, that's the other chazaka. So therefore, we've got now three different issues all thrown here together. Now, Avua de Shmuel of a Levi had different girsaot in the Mishnah. So Shmuel's father and Levi had in the Mishnah, shutaf ein lo chazaka, leaving out the word oman. And then Oman was seen as a kal v'chomer for Koshikin Oman. I mean, because if you're talking about a case of a shutaf, the shutafim, and of course the other case we had an apotropacy, there's no point of saying the Oman ain't lo chazaka. There's an Oman, there's no reason for us to assume has any interest in the stove that he's repairing or in the clothes that he's cleaning. The shutaf, it's given that he has an interest. We know he owns half of it. So it's very reasonable to say that he bought out the other half. And afal pike, we're not going to say that he has a chazak and that he bought out the other half. Koshkin and Oman, why bother discussing an Oman? So therefore, they left out the word Oman. Whereas Shmuel said only Oman and left out shutaf. Because he held that a shutaf does have a chazak. Because why should we not assume that he bought out the other guy, and that now it's been 3 years since the other guy said anything, and therefore he didn't hold on to his shtar like anybody else. Avo shutav, yesh lo chazaka. And this, in fact, is Shmuel Shita, across the board, as the Shmuel Ta'amei. The Omar Shmuel, we know that Shmuel Paskin, that shutafim, first of all, can be machzikim zalzeh. So let's say one of the shutafim worked the field for 3 years, not only his chelek, he worked the other guy's chelek for 3 years. Now he claims that he bought it. That's a good chazaka. Not only that, shutafim can be made one for the other, which is shocking, because obviously if each one is going to be made on the other one's half, then they do have a little bit of negiut in the testimony, which the Gemara is going to ask tomorrow.
This is an error of definition of a shutaf. You could have like the Yitzchak Zvulun type of thing where one is an investor and the other.
We're getting into that immediately. And they can be made one and the other. And if one does something for the other, in terms of Shmirah, then he's not considered to be a Shomer Chinam. Because it's too much joint interest. He understands that anything I do for A today, he's going to do for me B tomorrow. So I'll watch his behemoth today, let's say, if he's got to go to town. Because I know I can ask him to do the same thing for me tomorrow. And that's the point of having shutafut. So then by definition, I'm being paid. I'm not doing anybody any favors. I'm not doing anybody any favors. I have a greater chiyuv of shmirah. Therefore, I would be chayav for gedeva v'aveda, even though there was no value exchange. Because by definition, there's always value exchange. But the part that interests us so far is the machzikin zalzeh, which shows that Shmuel indeed had the girsa in the Mishnah that properly represented his shita. Asked Reb Abba to Reb Yehuda when they were talking together. It's difficult to believe that it means b'ma'arata devei Reb Yisakai. And indeed, the Bach changes the girsa to b'ma'atzarta. So they were working together. Reb Yisakai had a pressing company. And both of them happened to be there. They were renting his press. And I guess they were printing annotations or something. No, a ma'arata wouldn't mean a cave. It would mean a death, a burial chamber.
Not that they were hiding for
the life. Stam is a burial chamber, of course. Which would be. That's why it's difficult to believe. You're explaining how it could have gotten mixed up. Well, we certainly wouldn't have been referring. We would have called it a matzarata. The fact that it's in a cave is irrelevant. What makes something cave-like is the fact that it's a place of burial. What do I care if the ma'arata is on the roof in the penthouse, if the matzarata is in the penthouse, or if it's in a cave? There's no point in mentioning it. But a stam cave is certainly not a matzarta. So anyway, they were working together. So he asked him, this psak of Shmuel doesn't make any sense. I happen to know a ma'amar of Shmuel, which reads like this. A shutaf is ko yored b'reshut dami. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, because it's certainly a weird way to say the halacha that a shutaf is able to have a chazaka. But certainly, I mean, a yored b'reshut. A yored b'reshut would mean that it's somebody, as Dr. Elmer just said, who has the right to go in and work the other field as if I've allowed him to do that. I mean, because the assumption is that sometimes one of the shutafim will be the one who's working the whole thing with an understanding either that maybe they're exchanging years and sometimes he'll do it for me, or that I will, which is very, very common. One of the guys doesn't want to farm. So he says, look, if we owe it together, I'm not going to call in another guy to do the farming for me. You farm the whole thing and I'll give you the full share that a normal sharecropper would have, even though I know it's a lot less tirka for you. Because anyway, you're plowing up the next piece. Just plow the whole thing for me, plant the whole thing for me, spray the whole thing for me, and take 50%, whatever it is that a sharecropper would take in that area. Very common arrangement. So that's the word that he used, that he's a yored b'reshut. I don't know exactly why he used that word, but certainly it includes the fact that in lo chazaka, I mean, that's the whole point. A yored b'reshus is always assumed to have a right to be there without getting any rights to the karka. And if you're telling me that a shutif is assumed to be a yored b'reshus, then that is telling me that he has no chazaka. So how does Shmuel get away with saying two contradictory psakim here? The one that he says a shutif does have a chazaka, and the other end he says, well, it actually is a yored b'reshus. I mean, lav lameima, does that not say to you, that psak, that a shutif ain't lo chazaka? Yeah, where there's not a shutfus.
He's comparing him to yored b'reshus.
He's saying the assumption is that a shutfus is a yored b'reshus. But somebody else is in your field, why should I think it's a yored b'reshus unless that was the tviyah? Says the Gemara, well, there doesn't need to be a contradiction in that psak, because there are two separate possibilities that we're talking about over here. One could be talking about where one of the shutafim takes over the entire field that was owned by the two, so that he was nochit l'kula. The other case would be talking about where he is claiming that the part that is his is the better piece. And there he was only nochis lapalga. He only worked half, but he worked the better half.
Half of the front of his partner's field.
What's that?
Half of the partner's
field? No, that's the question. He's claiming, I'm in my part. Exactly. So he is saying, we split it. And, you know, I made up the difference, but I took the better part. And Vaharaya, I've been here for 3 years. The other guy says, I don't know what he's talking about. We never split it. We just made a deal that, you know, to keep things right, we'll, like, switch. So, you know, every 5 years, yeah, you take this, I'll take that. And that's how we did it. Now, in the other case, the same thing is going on. The shutev that isn't working the field, in the case where the guy was working the whole field, said, well, I mean, yes, he was there for the 3 years, but that's because part of our partnership was that it isn't really that kedai for one person to be doing half, the other person to be doing a half. So basically what we agreed on is we'll alternate the years. So half of the Shemitah, I'll be there, and half of the Shemitah, he'll be there. Now he went ahead, took the first 3 years of Shemitah, and now he's claiming he bought it when this was the deal of the Shutafut in the first place. So in both cases, one of them is tiny, that we split it, that this is, and the other one is tiny. This was the deal that we made. Now, there's a difference between those two cases, but the difference tends in both directions. So, there's some, Amrila l'haigisa, v'amrila l'haigisa. Some say, we were saying that in one case, Shmuel is saying the shutuf can be matzah, and in the other case, we're saying the shutuf cannot be matzah. Which direction is more reasonable? It's actually a psychological issue. I don't even think about it. One has to do with being willing to delay gratification. I'm putting in money. Now you're telling me that you guys made a deal that one guy's not going to make any profits for 3 years. He's going to put in money and not make any profits? That doesn't sound very reasonable to me. I mean, people don't put in money to wait 3 years to start making money. So over there, in Afinani, it sure looks, you know, as if something's going on over here. I mean, why is he in the field? So there should be a proper chazak. Masha Inkain, to say that you exchanged portions for 3 years, okay, that's reasonable. On the other hand, if you take a look at the exchanging portions and you say, well, there was no way that I was going to not take profit. So then, in other words, so you're interested in getting a return on your money. If you're interested in getting a return on your money, to say that you were willing to give in the 3 years that he's going to get 80% of the return, that not. Bishleim, if you would have told us, okay, you know what, I'm not going to, it's a long-term investment, I'm not interested. So I don't care. I'll come in there in 3 years, let him get everything ready and so on. I'll feel more comfortable coming in 3 years later. That would be acceptable. But we see you're the kind of guy who wants action and who wants money. So you're saying 3 years? You let the other guy take the majority of the profits? That doesn't seem reasonable. Again, it's a question of which psychological mode you look at. But some say that would be the difference. The other say the other direction was the difference. So, but you could certainly see it's not the same. I mean, I don't know which one possible. So I'm only guessing as to Shmuel's analysis of the process, the mental processes that are involved. I wouldn't assume on myself Shmuel's psak. But it's obvious that the two cases are not the same in terms of what the assumptions might be. So that would be a difference. Ravina says, nah, that's not the point. You're creating that difference. I mean, that's not an objective difference. You're claiming that you know that Shmuel's psak was based on a psychological analysis. Yeah, I mean, that's a boichsvara, maybe yes, maybe not. I mean, Bishleim, if you had seen any indication that that's the point, okay, but just like you're reluctant to say to which direction, you should be reluctant to claim that that's what it's all about. I have a much simpler explanation. I'm saying that you don't have to talk about two different cases. How about anachis l'kula? And there's still no problem. Because obviously there's a difference between a field that itba din chaluka and a field the letba din chaluka. Because if it's letba din chaluka, that means, by definition, it's not large enough to demand a split. If it's not large enough to demand a split, then by definition, it's not large enough to farm in section. Because if it were farmable economically, then it would be splittable. And you could insist on the split in court. Since you can't insist, so that's an objective standard. By not being able to insist, you're saying it is not economically viable for two of us to be farming. There we have no choice but to assume that the shutafut included the deal that you're going to be your egberishus, basically. I'm going to take it and you're going to be taking it, and alternative whatever it is, alternative 3 years, alternative 1 year, whatever the case may be. So in such a case, we're dealing with a completely different situation. That was the concert part. That wasn't the phone part. You know, it used to be, they would say, you know, turn off your cell phone and don't add your noise. The thing now it's, you know, that what follows turning off the cell phone. They don't even let you turn it off quietly anymore. It's outrageous. It's the most crazy thing. You're dying to turn the thing off. The more buttons you push, the more noise it's making. Crazy. Okay, so I say it's very simple. So the itba din chaluka, the letba din chaluka, and there's certainly no problem in Shmuel's Piskei Halachos. But getting back to what Shmuel said, because the words that he said are an awfully strange way of saying that a shutav can't have a chazaka. To start telling me it's because he's yored bereshus. Especially, I mean, the way Ravina just understands it. What do you mean he's ki yored bereshus? You're just saying that there was a deal in the shutafut, not that I'm farming for you and that I'm an aris and everything else. I mean, why say things this way? So what did he mean? Goof. Amashmol shutav ki yored bereshus dam. What did that mean to say? Maika mashmol. Are you trying to say that a shutav ain lo chazaka? Is that all what you're trying to say? I mean, there's easy ways to say that, you know. You could say the following brilliant thing. Shutaf elo chazaka. What do you think about that? So obviously, if you're saying that is a yored bereshus, you are saying something completely different. Well, what is it that you mean? What are you adding? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Bar Avuah, what it means is that the shutaf would be notel b'sheva hamagia l'ktafayim b'sadeh she'ina asuya lita k'sadeh ha'asuya lita. Point over here is that a little bit of background to understand this. If somebody invades somebody else's rishos, then there's complex dinim about how we reimburse him for whatever he did leave in the field after he's thrown out. And let's say somebody goes into a field and he invests in the field, he's unable to establish a chazaka, we throw him out. So then he has a din of an intruder into somebody else's field, basically. So there's different elements that are nogea. First of all, something that was in the field at the time that he invaded obviously has no rights to it all. He didn't make that happen. On the other hand, things that he made happen by putting in sprinkler systems and then seeds and so on and so forth, he did make happen. But now, did he make happen the thing that the owner would have wanted to make happen? Let's say it was a field that was meant to be a field of tefu'ah. Because then that's good. Now, it's a lot more work, but it's going to generate more profits for you. And he turns it into an orchard. Now the guy says, I didn't want an orchard. So now, obviously, we can't expect to give that guy what he would have had if he would have been a sharecropper. Because this was not what the field was miyuat for. All the other fields around here aren't orchards. This is lazy bones. Goes in and turns it into an orchard for me. Thank you very much. So there, in that case, we're certainly not going to pay him like an aris. And we have that whole formula about how much extra, and what did he put in, what was greater, the amount that he put in, the amount of the accrued value in the field, and so on. But Dinavan Oritz doesn't have. What he is saying now, Shmuel, is that taking both issues into consideration, a sada asuyalita or a sada she'ena asuyalita, it doesn't matter in the case of a shota. Whether it was magia liktafayin, which means, let's take the simple meaning that Rashi uses all over Shas and Rashbam follows. Magia liktafayin means the corn is as high as an elephant's eye, which is actually higher than ktafayin. So it's up to your shoulders. Rabbeinu Tam's approach is, it's the shevach ha-magia liktafayin, it's the value that comes due to your shoulders, meaning, you've been dragging everything on your shoulders to make this happen. So in other words, things that you worked for. All the things that you invested. So in other words, the things that you didn't invest in, those things, I mean, why would you get a right in those things? Right? They were there before. They were there for somebody else's work. So that you're not going to get. But things that you did, okay, that Taylor you would do. When it comes to a case where a guy would have invited an oris in. So there the halacha is that we assume that the invitation to an oris includes, as part of the schar of the oris, the right to whatever is there also. So you tell a guy, come in and become my sharecropper. And unless we specify otherwise, obviously you can make any tanah you want, but unless we specify otherwise, the normal din of an oris is defined by the normal usage in that area in terms of percentages, and it's also assumed that you're giving him a certain element of the pride of ownership, so that it's a feudal pride, but nonetheless there's a level of pride of that as well. And whatever is there, he gets a piece of the action there too.
F-U-T-I-L-E or F-E-U-D-A of
pride? F-E-U. All pride is F-U-T. That's the, Kohelet. I mean, we're about to be reading about that. Now, Kol Havel, what do you... That's for sure. All right. So here the question is that if Lamaisa, a shutef now, goes in, he is treated not only in the sense that we won't accept his taina, but that what he's looked at as doing is not intrusion. It's looked at as working for the other partner as if there was an invitation. Therefore, we will give him a chelik in what was there, because he's taking over the other guy's farming. We'll give him a chelik in what wasn't there, and we will also provide him the din of the aris, no matter what the yi'ud of the field was. So therefore, there are two important differences. The chelik of an aris he'll get, which is a certain percentage, and that is whether or not it looked like this was meant to be a sort of tfu or a sort of ilanais. And B, we will also give him the chelik that was there that had not been produced by him for the time that he was there. That's why he uses these words. Lomar shenotel b'shevach ha-magia l'ktafayim. That's A. That's the difference. And that he takes that even in a sada she'ina asuyalita, where over there he wouldn't get any rights, bichlal, of an aris, where he was notea in a sada she'ina asuyalita, as if it was a sada that is a sada that was. It's as if it was a sada that was a medes lita, even though it wasn't.
Could we have answered the previous Rami? No, you got it all wrong, but the fact that he says Yorid Rishur, he's not saying that he's got
that. No, because it definitely includes that. Definitely includes that. The point is that he's saying now, if he had just said those words, we would have said, so if he's thrown out, so then he's like anybody else. Yadola tachtona, show us how much you invested. Let's get an assessor, see how much the field, and you take the lesser. You know, that's what I would have thought. So I can't just say those words because it leaves him open to a tremendous loss of money as the shutaf was. In reality, he does have the rights to full arisut. Yeah, lovely. Rav argues on the Mishnah because he's Tanu Vapoli. I, Rav himself, passing this way. Rav Shmuel d'amar tavayu milva al peino gove lo mina yorshim velo mina lekuchot. Come on, milva zvini karamita. Obviously, a milva kika yaziv, a tina kika yaziv, kiechad alo litzulu nichsay alay, and because of that, there's no way to do due diligence. Whereas zvine, manda zovin harabe faresi, zovin kiechad alefek lekala, and therefore, even just edim are sufficient for that level of kol. Tana rabbanu, achla ha'av shana v'ben shtayim, ha'av shtayim v'ben shana, ha'av shana v'ben shana, ve'alo keach shana, ha'rezu chazaka. So in other words, lemeimer deloker it lekala, which of course is what Rav said as well. But now we have the braita, we have exactly the same case. We could have asked this back on the original thing, veramini. But here we have an exact parallel. So it's a beautiful way to ask the question. Veramini, achla b'fnei avshana b'fnei abenshtayim b'fnei avshtayim b'fnei abenshana b'fnei avshana b'fnei abenshana u'b'fnei lokeach shana harezu chazaka v'isal gadaitach lokeach it lekala. So then he knew about the fact that it was sold. But then in lecha mechah gedolah mizo. Omer of papa kitanya hibem bocher sedotav stam. Omanim va shutafim va risin va apotropin in lehem chazaka and lo leish chazaka benichse ishto ולא לאישה חזקה בנכסי בעלה ולא לאב בנכסי הבן ולא בלבן בנכסי האב במה דבורים אמורים במחזיק but אבל במחזיק ונותן מתנה ואחים של חלקור, מחזיק בנכסי הגר. So then in all of those cases, just ne'ila, or gadar, or parat, kosho, arezu chazaka in terms of kinyan. Avodah Shmuel v'Levi, Tano in the Mishnah, shutaf in lo chazaka, but they left out uman, because kosho ain't uman. Shmuel, on the contrary, only said uman and left out shutaf. So he had uman in lo chazaka. Because he held shutaf, yesh lo chazaka. Was the Shmuel time? He yomer Shmuel shutafim machazikim zelze umeidim zelze v'nasim shomer socher zelze. Ramele Reb Abba, Reb Yehuda ben Matzarta ve'Reb Zakkai. Mi yomer Shmuel shutaf yesh lo chazaka. V'yomer Shmuel shutaf kiyori b'rishus dami. Lav lemeimer the shutaf ein lo chazaka. Lo kash. Adenach the kula adenach the paga. Amar lehagis v'amar lehagis. Ravino Amar Nana, Ava Adanach the Kula, Vlokasha, Hadi Eat Batin Chaluka, Adalat Batin Chaluka, Gufa, Amar Shmuel, Shutaf, Kiyorei Vrshutami, Maika Mashman, the Shutafut, the Shutaf Ein Lo Chazaka, Lema, Shutaf Ein Lo Chazaka, Amar Nachon, Amar Rabba Bavua, no, if he would have said that, I would have thought Yadola Tachtona, and he's trying to say that Adarabba, he's noto B'Shevach HaMagielech Tafayim B'Sada Shena Su Yelita, which is two issues. First of all, it makes no difference what the yi'ud of the sadeh is. Secondly, even Shevach was already there before he started farming.